Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, May 16th, 2019. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, I'm back after 8 days in Thailand. It was a remarkable trip. I wanted to make sure I got to Asia this year, and I haven't been to Thailand since 1971. I was staying at a resort, Echo Village Spa, Phasai Spa and Resort. It's about 3 hours east of Bangkok. It's in the jungle on the coast of Thailand. And then I had one day of meetings, fascinating meetings in Bangkok. Thailand is 94% Buddhist, so it's a remarkably coherent culture internally, a kind of coherence and kindness that we don't enjoy. The owner of Phasai is a very, very intelligent executive who provides high-level communication support to a major bank in Thailand. She's lived in Thailand for several decades, and I know her family, and everybody kept saying, oh, you've got to meet this person. So I took the opportunity to get a chance to know her. She's unbelievably knowledgeable about Thailand and the economy, but just very knowledgeable about the world. Anyway, so it was fascinating to be able to talk with her almost every day. Thailand's at the heart of Southeast Asia, so it's between China and India. In essence, it's to the south of China and to the east of India, and it's right on the South China Sea. So whether it's the One Belt, One Road build out, or the AI superpowers competition, or the fight over the sea lanes in the South China Sea, it's right in the crossroads. One expression I kept hearing was that Thailand was the Turkey of Asia, as in Turkey being right at the heart of the intersection between Europe and Asia, a very strategic location. So it's also at the heart of the rise of the Asian consumer, because Thailand has, the growth has been very strong, the economy has been very strong, and it's significantly more prosperous than it was when I was there in 1971. While I was there, as I do in every country, I underwrote and reviewed all of the Thailand ADRs. Those are the stocks that trade in the United States. And for the Thai headquartered companies, so for my investment screen, I'm always looking at all the companies in the place where I am, and that was fascinating. I remember in 1997 when I was in China, everybody was having to import managers from Singapore because they had no management infrastructure, no management class, no people trained in management. And now you see that the managerial infrastructure is really exploding. And I really felt it this time just because I was so focused on looking at different companies. But what you can see is that that gives Asia incredible leverage and power because you have so many talented, capable people available. And of course, that means they're moving forward and growing rapidly and building great companies that are getting seasoned. So you're starting to see companies with a lot more track record, a lot more internal gravitas, a lot more resources than you used to. And I don't underestimate the power of this expansion, because I think even though the world's going to be nuts in the geopolitical sense, you're going to have companies all over the world where everybody gets up, works hard every day to make things work because that's what they get paid to do. You hear the same thing in Thailand that I hear when I'm in Europe, and I heard last year when I was in Australia and New Zealand, and that is, you know, basically we understand that we're under the U.S. national security umbrella, but, and we don't want the U.S. to fail. We like the U.S., but we think it's failing. And we certainly don't trust the Chinese, and we're afraid of what they'll be like to deal with as they grow more powerful. But, you know, life goes on and the U.S. is failing. So there's real, in that sense, there's real movement away from the U.S. because life goes on. People want to build, they want to grow. The future beckons with promises of something other than sanctions, shriekometers, and war. And the message coming out of the United States when you sit and look at it from Asia is uniquely negative. But it was wonderful for me to be in Thailand because it reminded me of what it's like to live in a society where the vast majority of the people are making money from being productive and have some enthusiasm about the future. There's no doubt the Shriekometer and the Swamp are doing great harm to the U.S. brand. So the inability of Washington to adjust to a Trump presidency and try and get something done has been very harmful. And I will be honest, my concern is that before Biden announced, you know, his backers made a deal with the Chinese behind the president's back for, you know, help us win and help us make Trump look bad, and we'll pay you back in the post-2020 world. I wanted to mention I'm going to be in Bloomfield, Michigan next week, and Mark Skidmore is joining us. We have an event. There's still space available, so check it out if you can. You can get to Bloomfield, Michigan, get it out. He and I are speaking the day before and at a Republican women's event in Bloomfield. And I'm very much looking forward to that. That's a very, I think that's going to be a very knowledgeable and interested crowd. So I'm looking forward to that. And I always love getting together with Mark, and it always gives us an opportunity to talk more about what we're up to. Speaking of missing money, the real game of missing money, the 2018 annual wrap-up is finally in hardcover. I'm sitting here looking at the first volume. It was so large in terms of the material because I wanted to get all the material on the missing money into hard copy. Given the speed at which things are disappearing from the internet, I thought, okay, nothing better than to get this in hard copy out to the hands of subscribers. So we're doing two books, volume one and volume two. Volume one, I'm going to check the hard copy, and then we'll put in the final order for the printer on Monday. So we hope to mail those out to the premium subscribers by the end of the month, and we'll have it up on the store if you also want to get a hard copy. And then the second one will follow about 2 weeks later. This is a for an investor who's interested in doing due diligence on the U.S. federal credit, it's a just a marvelous resource. There's nothing like it. It's got everything there you need to understand what's happened and to help you decide what you're going to do about it. So I would absolutely encourage you to consider taking a look at it, getting it, taking a look at it, and then after you've taken a look at it, consider passing it on to people you know who deal with your money, whether it's your banker, your insurance agent, your pension fund manager, your money manager, anybody who's dealing with money and who it's important that they understand what's happening with the U.S. federal credit. You really, this is a great book to hand out to them and to ask them to read. Our theme tonight is the difference between a heartbeat and silence. It was inspired by a very interesting article. When I was flying back from Thailand, I changed planes in Paris, and I was getting on the flight from Paris to New York. The one English-speaking paper that was available was the New York Times. Those who know me know I very rarely read the New York Times, although sometimes I'll post a link to them. And there's an article called Surviving in Spite of Extinction by a woman named Margaret Renkel, who lives in Nashville and had become thoroughly depressed by all the predictions of major extinctions going around the world. She finished her article with the following. She talked about all the different things she was doing to try and, you know, create a garden that would support the life of bees and make sure she had fresh food, et cetera. All great things. So here's what she says. Quote, I can remind myself all day long, every day, that there's a difference between doing something and doing nothing. That something, small as it might seem, is not nothing. The space between them is far apart, limitless stretching distances apart. It's the difference between a heartbeat and silence. I love that. If you haven't read my commentary, Turtle Forth, it's about never giving up no matter how incoherent your environment becomes. We've often heard Dr. Joseph Farrell in the wrap-up say, own the culture. What he means is, you know, if you look at our behavior, each one of us, one by one, if we can integrate the divine into our everyday habits and live that kind of life within you know, promote in our own little world that culture. If enough of us do it, it's going to make all the difference. I had a friend who ran for governor of Tennessee on the Green Party, and he used to say, he said, you know, you think a snowflake is powerless, but you get enough of them together and they can shut down New York City. And don't think the leadership isn't cognizant of that and afraid of it. I bring this up because change is accelerating unbelievably rapidly, and it's going to continue to do so. We're coming into real sort of controlled demolitions as well as fundamental changes in institutions. And if you look at the economics of the Bretton Woods system, it doesn't work. And so we're watching, you know, triage and squabbling all over the place and big changes afoot. So it's critical as that happens that you stay focused on taking the actions that you can take and doing what you can do, and not worry about worrying about the big picture really detracts from you accomplishing what you can do. So maximize your heartbeat, because it'll make all the difference in the world, not just for you, but for everybody around you. And if enough of us do it, and I think enough of us will, you know, it changes the formula for everything. Money and markets. Well, the squabbling on the trade war is has caused the dollar to go up a little bit and bonds to do a little bit better, but the stock market is off. So the U.S. dollar index now up 2% for the year. The long treasury ETF up 4.36, the intermediate up 3.21. The bond aggregate up 3.37, and high-yield bonds, the junk ETF, up 8.65. Who would think it? Jeffrey Gundlach put out a new, who I think is my favorite U.S. bond manager, put out a new, or did a new interview talking about the problems with corporate bonds and why the squeeze on junk has to come. I put a link up to it on the website, but if you just do a search for Jeff Gundlach, you're going to get the interviews. There's a significant slug of that high yield debt in the oil patch. And I think it's quite interesting that Pompeo came out of the oil industry and is busy working with Trump to keep the oil price up. The oil ETF or the ETN is up over 50% this year. So that's certainly helping prop up the junk market for now. Equities clearly trading off with concerns about China and the trade war. The Uber IPO, which is arguably one of the most anticipated IPO in the world, of course, came into this environment. It's not an environment where people want companies that can't cash flow. So probably not the best time. It's too bad Uber couldn't have come out a month earlier. The SEC is talking about, they voted to move forward a proposal last Thursday that would exempt public companies with less than $100 million in annual revenue from a component of outside audits. And they describe it as part of a broader effort to entice more companies to go public. And this is completely nuts. If you listen to our great interview 2 years ago with Howard Root called Cardiac Arrest, on his book Cardiac Arrest, about how the Department of Justice came after his company. I mean, the companies all across this country are being destroyed by technocracy. They're being destroyed by lawless Sheriff of Nottingham kind of enforcement and corruption, bad behavior in the business community, bad behavior in the general public. So the problem is the risks and expenses of dealing in a lawless system. You know, every time your stock goes down, you got a bunch of litigators jumping on to just, you know, with nuisance lawsuits. Who wants to go public in a swamp? And I think letting small companies do the equivalent of FASB 56, you know, or moving towards that standard of secrecy just exacerbates the problem. So to me, the preferred strategy of operating in an organized crime system has become print money and use it and spend it in secret. Well, it's not a plan. It's just another example of an inability to deal with reality. So the S&P up 15.62% now. That's backing off from where we were. The home builders up 24.85%. VGK, the European ETF, up 12.45%. Germany up 11.64%. Developed markets up 10.92%. China large caps up 6.6% and small caps up 11.13%. So China backing off a lot. The emerging markets up 5.04%. Commodities up 7.38%. If this continues, if the trade war continues, expect commodities to soften. Copper certainly has, which is a signal. Gold up 21 basis points for the year, so essentially flat. And silver down 6%. As I said, the oil ETF is up 51.98%, so almost 52% this year. As we discussed last week and the week before, the U.S. strategy has been to take sales by Syria, Iran, and Venezuela off the market, and that, among other things, runs up the price. If you haven't read Jim Norman's book, The Oil Carter, listen to my interviews with Norman in the archive. They are fantastic oldies and goodies, but I would absolutely read the book because it'll show you the extent to which the national security state can manipulate the oil price. It's quite extraordinary. It was the strategy that brought the Berlin Wall down and the Soviet Union down, was just driving the oil price down during that period and just starving them for revenues. It was economic warfare par excellence. We're playing hardball with Venezuela. They cut off the electricity to the Venezuela embassy. The number of violations of international law that America is committing vis-a-vis Venezuela is just breathtaking. And really the message is, you know, this is our sphere of influence in America, in the Americas, and Venezuela is going to do what we say. It's a puppet state. And that's what's being debated. Is it a sovereign state or a puppet state? I got a message from Rob Kirby, the great Rob Kirby. Bad day for Bitcoin. Bitcoin dropped from 7,900 to 6,180 in under 10 minutes Thursday evening. I checked, and I'm not showing that, you know, if it dropped, it was just a spike, and it's back up into sort of 7,200, but it did have a bad day. Rob takes that as a sign that there's real liquidity crunch in the global markets. Clearly, liquidity crunches are being felt and started, but I think there's a lot more juice in the system yet. Let's look at the trade war. So if you want to understand what is at the heart of the current war with China, you need to watch Zero Days about the Stuxnet virus that the NSA developed with Israel. It gives you a good sense of the extent to which the United States relies on digital systems and software to control globally. And it's really invaluable background information for what is unfolding between the U.S. and China, as well as Steve Roche's book Unbalanced is also another great piece of information. But at the heart of all of this is the tech wars. The other book you might read is I did a review, I think about 6 months ago, on a book called AI Superpowers. If you read Unbalanced AI Superpowers and watch the Stuxnet documentary, another good one to watch, which we'll do on the Salieri Report, is the China Hustle on their corruption and fraud in the small cap markets. But if you look at the heart of what this current trade war is about, in addition to the balancing of the trade relationship with China, which we knew was coming, and that's why Roche called his book Unbalanced, and it's got to get, you know, the message was it's got to get back in balance. At the very heart of this is the war between who controls tech, who's better at tech, and part of that is the rollout of 5G. And so this is why Huawei is such the largest phone communication equipment company in the world is at the heart of this battle. Because the rollout with 5G, essentially what this is about is who controls the digital systems which are going to be the platform for the currency, the financial system, and the surveillance systems. So who controls the one-way mirror? Who controls mind control, the mind control machine? And who controls the money? That's what this is about. So I remind you again of Nicholas Negroponte's favorite quote of his when he was at the Rand the Media Lab. In a digital age, data about money is worth more than money. Now, China, it's clear to me that China's hard line really got pushed after the One Belt, One Road Forum, which was all the indications when I was in Asia was it was at the end of April and wildly successful. But when they came back with their markup of the 152-page document, it was all about the war about whether they can steal our intellectual property and other things related to building out the global digital systems and 5G. Yesterday, on May 15th, Trump declared a national emergency for information and communication systems. Now, that is not over the top at all. There are several national emergencies for information and communication systems. Let me just read it. The U.S. Commerce Department said on Wednesday it is adding Huawei Technology Company, LTD, and 70 affiliates to its so-called enemy list, a move that bans the telecom giant from buying parts and components for U.S. companies without U.S. government approval. This now made possible by Trump's declaration of national emergency. So we have the national emergency declared, and then the first thing Commerce does is basically put Huawei Technology and 70 affiliates on an enemy list. And then voila, London comes out. Let me just read this from Reuters. China's Huawei poses such a grave security risk to the United Kingdom that the government must not allow it to have even a limited role in building 5G networks, the former head of Britain's M16 foreign spy service said on Thursday. In what some have compared to the Cold War arms race, the United States is worried that 5G dominance would give any global competitor such as China an advantage Washington is not ready to accept. Now, here's an interesting twist, which I assume is connected, but big question mark. Then in Italy, and this is some great reporting on the trade war from The Last Refuge. It's conservativetreehouse.com, theconservativetreehouse.com. And one of my favorite sites to go to for updates on sort of the swamp drama. But anyway, from The Last Refuge, they pointed out, apparently Italian media are reporting that the prime minister has requested the resignations of several top Italian intelligence agencies. The move is being interpreted as the government's responding to the previous government's coordinated activity with U.S. intelligence agencies during the 2016 U.S. election surrounding Spygate. Now, it even gets more interesting. And there is a very direct connection. The Dallas police raided the Catholic Diocese of Dallas over subpoena discovery. They said they weren't happy with the subpoena discovery, so they raided. It's related to the sexual abuse accusations, basically pedophilia. Why is this important? If you look at the networks that were developed starting at the end of World War II in an agreement between the CIA, the U.S. intelligence, and the Vatican to basically open the U.S. markets to drugs and then launder the money in a variety of ways, including the Vatican Bank. It was basically a CIA-Vatican partnership. If you want to go back, go watch the Godfather movies to see sort of the resistance they had to overcome to make that network really go. But anyway, at the heart of those were control files created with the help of the local diocese with pedophilia. And that's where the pedophilia scandal comes out. But it's a much deeper, deep state story. You know, it's been portrayed in the press as just sort of priests who went wrong. And I assure you, it's far different and far bigger than that. And it very much ties into those networks. And as you see in the, when you get to Godfather 3, there's very few degrees of separation between the top of the Vatican and the street. So if you have, remember, you have now at the head of the Department of Justice, basically a Bush CIA guy, if the Dallas police are raiding the Catholic diocese, I doubt it's just a local issue. I can't believe, you know, Dallas is Bush syndicate, you know, ground zero. So this is right at the heart of whatever is going on, and I'm gonna keep watching. If you see any raids by local police on Catholic diocese, you definitely want to post that at Soleri or email it to us because something big is afoot. Now, a big question I'm getting from many people is, will there be war with Iran? I think, of course, war with Iran is at the very heart of the war with China, because if you look at a map, the flow of oil to China from Iran is critical for China. And if you look at the One Belt, One Road, Iran is right in the heart of Eurasia. And it's right in the middle between Iraq and Afghanistan, which we have invaded and conquered. And Iran was always the prize in the seven countries in 5 years. Now, Trump has repeatedly said, no, he does not want to invade Iran. However, Netanyahu absolutely wants a war with Iran, and his best chance of getting one is before 2020. So, the longer he waits, the weaker the U.S. gets in terms of relative military strength vis-a-vis China and Russia. Saker says that the U.S. has absolutely no ability to execute a land war with Iran, and I believe him. So I think it's military suicide to start a war with Iran. However, I don't think Netanyahu is particularly concerned about what happens to the United States, and his best shot, given Trump's loyalty, unfortunately, to that faction and their bankers, is this is his best shot. So I think he's going to try hard. If a Democrat wins in 2020, he will likely be worse off. I think the question for all of us is, what is the state of the space weaponry and the secret weapons? Can they make a critical difference? You know, in theory, is there a way the U.S. could win such a war? I don't think so. I also think it will terrorize and frighten to death Europe and nations around the world, and it will be impossible to gain sort of global political support. Now, I don't underestimate the ability of Netanyahu and his crew to blackmail in politics. And so it's hard to imagine how they talk Trump into political and economic suicide, but I never underestimate their ability to position U.S. presidents to act against the best interests of themselves and the country. But it looks unwinnable to me. Saker's going to join in 2 weeks to discuss just this issue. They're calling it Farmageddon, and we're seeing farmers getting hit by a variety of different forces, it's a lethal combination. We have severe flooding in the heartland that means farmers cannot plant. We're getting reports of lots of land sales underway, which is not surprising because the average age of the farmers is now late 50s, early 60s, and these are people who don't have the ability to take the hit and with 20 years to make it back. The China trade war is a second whammy coming at the worst time. And then the fundamental slow burn of higher and higher real increases in the cost of living. You add that and you've got a really lethal combination. Now, what does it mean? I keep saying this, I'll say it again, food prices are going to continue to rise. So make sure you have a stockpile. It also means that control of the food supply is going to centralize even further, and that's exceptionally and extremely dangerous. Plant a garden. Support your local gardeners. It's so unbelievably important because if enough of us can start gardens and start growing as much local food as we can, it can make a significant difference to how this turns out. Traditionally, GNP, a country's GNP, is very much a multiple of its farm income historically. And as we've centralized control of farm income, there's some indication that things have gotten or it's less of a direct correlation, but I think that's really covered over by massive amounts of government debt. Pull out all the government debt that's financing the growth in the GNP, and if you have these kinds of fall-offs in farm income, I think you're in danger of that wipeout in the agricultural sector sort of spreading virally throughout the economy. One other item under the agriculture concept that or topic that's very important, there was a new award on Monday to a couple on a lawsuit about Monsanto. We saw the week before, the prior 2 weeks, shareholders revolts at Bayer's, furious at the management for taking on the liabilities by acquiring Monsanto in a deal where you assume the liabilities of the company. You know, this could really do terrible harm to Bayer as a corporation. And so the shareholders are in revolt. I talked to one person today, an experienced business person, who said if those shareholders are worth anything, they'll make sure everybody who was in the room that approved that decision gets fired. This is really going to go down in history as one of the great corporate disasters. It almost makes you wonder, when Bayer bought Monsanto, I was stunned and I said, why would you ever do that unless you had an airtight guarantee that you would be indemnified against all liabilities? And I'm wondering if they had a side deal with essentially the Clintons and the Rockefeller syndicate to make sure that they were protected on this. And then when the Clintons lost, you know, Bayer was kind of hanging out to dry. It's very difficult to believe that a group of competent corporate German executives would take on those liabilities and not understand what was coming politically. There was a new report from Natural News this week that Monsanto had maintained a black operations unit that was targeting anybody who opposed the products. I absolutely believe it because I used to get reports from farmers around the country that the farmers who resisted going onto the Monsanto model would literally have black SUVs show up and people would come out and beat them up. So the hatred of Monsanto, you can cut it. I've had money managers who, I'll never forget going to Switzerland. I was talking to a money manager about possibly doing something with him. And he said, you know, I don't do screening or ESG. And I said, look, if you buy Monsanto, there can be no relationship between us because every client or potential client I know, you know, will not do business with somebody. They do not want their money in Monsanto. So if Monsanto is in your fund, he had a fund. If Monsanto is in your fund, the answer is no. And it's black and white. It's no. There's no if and or buts. There's no money. There's no deal. There's no negotiation. It's a no. They will, you know, they will say no to any relationship. And I've seen that happen to money managers so many times that I had a real sense of the bitterness and the anger. So it's one of the great baffling mysteries of the last decade for me. Why would Bayer do that deal? There's got to be a story there. This was the hardest part of my week. I want to talk about criminal cultural debasement. If you look at our dialogue with China, we keep hearing various commentators talking about why we're superior. They're a one-party system. They're communists, and we believe in capitalism and personal freedom. Therefore, we're better. Now, while we're saying that, we're watching the spread of Hotel Auschwitz. We have a perversion problem, which is moving quickly, and it is completely out of control. And this is serious. It starts with a wonderful subscriber who was very concerned about a transgender transition that one of the children in her family is doing, who wrote a long piece about it, which I published a week or two ago. You can find it up at Soleri. And she sent me an interview by a woman who's organizing moms and parents in every county to stop the new California sex education curriculum. And anyway, so this is a video interview of two moms talking and describing in detail what the new California sex education curriculum is. Now, I have not confirmed that this video is accurate. It certainly sounds authentic and accurate to me. I would love it if anybody wants to look and comment. It's in both my Twitter feed and we've posted it up on the website. So in the news, trends, and stories section. I have reports from all over the country that this kind of curriculum is happening elsewhere, and or pieces of it are happening elsewhere, or it's under consideration in other states. So this is a movement. This is something that's being rolled out state by state by state, but it's a concerted, organized effort to make it happen. I would describe this curriculum as basically a curriculum to teach kids how to be porn stars and sex slaves. It's basically getting them ready to become sexualized in very perverted ways at a very young age. And it's not nice. This is very dangerous stuff. You're talking about an approach to sex that can absolutely destroy a child and their future and their success in life. It's very, very bad. You're training kids to be sex slaves or porn stars. And you may think that I'm exaggerating. I'm not. You need to really watch it and think seriously about why you would organize and teach a child that kind of information at a very young age. It's absurd. And I think it cannot be tolerated. If you're in California, you need to leave, not to say that it's not coming elsewhere. So it doesn't, you need to organize, you need to get with these other parents and do something. You need to get all the legislators who passed this stuff fired. You need to take it to the courts. You need to fight. And frankly, you need to stop financing it, because if you look at who's financing all this stuff, we're financing it. And the notion that you should finance, you should provide to your school district the money that they need to teach your child how to be a sex slave or a porn star is, you're paying for it. We're going to have to, what this is going to come down to in area after area, if we don't stop financing this, it's going to continue. The second thing is, while we're watching our kids being taught to be porn stars and sex slaves, we are watching a rollout of a push to move to mandated vaccines. Now, mandated vaccines and canceling religious and philosophical or medical exemptions is a violation of the Nuremberg Code and principles. The whole idea coming out of Nuremberg was informed consent. So I have the right to be educated, and I have the right to say no or yes. And, you know, whether a doctor disagrees with me or not, I control my body, and a parent also dictates what their child can and cannot do. And so the parent is superior to the state vis-a-vis the child and their health care, and the individual is sovereign. So the idea, that's why John Rappaport named this Hotel Auschwitz, because it's kind of a free-range concentration camp, you know, medical experiment between the global spraying and the vaccinations and all sorts of other things. We are watching a massive violation of the Nuremberg principles by the U.S. government. And again, we're financing it. You and I are financing this. Dr. Randy Dent, thanks to another subscriber, sent me a 2-hour video, and this subscriber always sends the best stuff. She's super duper smart, and just has an eye and an ear, knows what I'm gonna like. And it was a 2-hour video. I thought, how in the world could I watch this? And then I thought, well, I'll just watch 15 minutes. And the next thing you know, during the day, I'm taking breaks for 15 minutes to keep watching it. And then when I shut down last night, I finished it, and it was excellent. It was a speech that Dent, he's a chiropractor in Detroit, gave, you know, I'm flying up to Detroit to do the speech in Michigan. And if I'd seen it sooner, I would have made an appointment to go see him. He covers all the materials that are in vaccines that have corrupted or damaged people's immune systems, and he connects the dots to all the different autoimmune diseases that people are having. He's very intelligent, very funny, very knowledgeable, and it's very, very clear. And if you thought the word Hotel Auschwitz was a little extreme, think again. Anyway, it's in my Twitter feed, and it's in the news, trends, and stories. So I, 2 hours is a lot of watch time, but it's absolutely worth it. And it's remarkably entertaining, given that it's a very dark subject. But this is information that can save your life. So one of the reasons I really want you to understand how bad it is because once you get over the grief of it, then you can deal with it. And again, it really can save your life. So back to the big picture here, between Hotel Auschwitz and the vaccinations and the California sex education, you're talking about going way over the line. And I say this because you and I are financing this. So certainly look for the opportunity to protect yourself from this, but also look for the opportunity to organize with others to push back, because this cannot stand. Conquer the Americas. I had one subscriber post a comment saying, we're reshuffling the cards, and instead of the U.S. being responsible for the global system, they'll just take control of Mexico and Venezuela and establish their primacy in the Americas. And given the economics of being the global cop, that's something that could absolutely happen. In the multipolar world, you could see America pull back and assert a lot more dominance over their immediate neighbors. So it's definitely one possibility, driven very much by the economics. But we see, as we talked about last week, we see goof number three in Venezuela. We tried to engineer a third regime change for the third time, and for the third time it failed. And here's the thing, if you're going to openly violate international law in this kind of way, it's really a bad idea to fail. So the combination of ignoring international law and then failing at it is very, what was it the Godfather said? Better to be, feared than respected. Anyway, so it inspires a lot of disrespect. A response has now been to turn off the electricity at the Venezuela embassy to try and force everybody out. Again, a violation of international law, I would say. That's not, that's supposed to be Venezuelan turf, not American turf. Heads up, Operation Blue Beam was it's an operation to use, among other things, holograms to trick the population. And we see an article in a British tabloid now of a picture from Argentina of a cloud that looks, it's a vision in the sky. It looks just like Jesus, and there's no way it's natural. It's a hologram. but people don't know that technology exists. And so you can just, of course, the paper reporting that this is signs of a spiritual revival and Jesus is coming and, anyway, bad sign that's happening. Not to be missed next week, European elections, very fractious. So let's just see what happens. But very important thing. Keep an eye on that. Another question I keep getting is how long do we have? And what they're meaning is how long do we have until the system unwinds? There's no way to know, because there's a lot to unwind, and this could take a long, long time. Now, if you look at what Trump is trying to do, if he's successful, it could certainly go on for quite a while. And if the secret weapons are successful, in theory, it could go on forever. But if you look at what Trump is trying to do with the rebalancing of the Chinese relationship, what he's trying to do on immigration, he's trying to get the cash flows back to something that can stand much more on its own. But he's very dependent on government debt in the meantime, which is exacerbating all sorts of problems that we have. So this could last for another 10 months, and this could last for another 10 years. And in theory, depending on the military balance of power, it could last forever. In an ideal world, you're prepared for 10 months or 10 years, and you can live a free and inspired life despite whichever one it is. So this is rock and roll time. If you haven't read my commentary, Walking by Seas, you have to do a search for it at the library. But it's about how to live in a world where the uncertainty is this extraordinary. It certainly is. Our interview this evening is with Paul Glover. I had a chance to catch up with Paul when I was in Pennsylvania, where he lives. And now I believe he's running for governor on the Green Party ticket in Pennsylvania. Paul was the founder of Ithaca Hours, which since the time of the Depression is, to my knowledge, the most successful local currency started in the U.S. As you can imagine, competing with the central banking system and the Fed is politically a very difficult thing to do. But Paul had great success at it. And so I got together with him to talk about currency, but also he does a lot of different tools and other things to sort of help communities organize to get much better sort of benefits for themselves economically. So he's done a lot with healthcare, but other forms of job creation, business creation. He taught at Urban Studies at Temple University for a time. He's a very, very knowledgeable, intelligent guy. Anyway, so I'd had a subscriber who was a mayor who said, could you do something on community currencies? Because he's grappling with how to create economic or how to finance economic activity on Main Street. I will say this, at the end of the Great Depression, very important statistic to know, there were 3,100 community currencies in America. And, you know, the first thing that happened was the Fed and the, you know, the central banking warfare system made a big effort to make it worth everybody to come off of those community currencies. And it's too bad, because if you look at almost every community in America, they could benefit tremendously. You could get much more local small business activity if you had a community currency. The problem is then you're competing for resources against the big guys. And if you want the big guys to come in and take over the whole market, you don't want community currencies. Anyway, but if you look at the time that we're headed into, it's a tool that is very useful. If a community can come together and create a community currency, if they need to, they'll save themselves a lot of pain. Our hero this evening is somebody, a gentleman who's been a hero several times already at the Salieri Report, is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I wanted to acknowledge the Children Defense Fund came out with a great resource book on dealing with the vaccination issue. And we posted it at News Trends and Stories. You can find it in Food and Health. And just as they did, instead of getting a lot of attention for that, the whole thing got whited out by one of Kennedy's or several members of his family coming out and saying they loved him, but he was misinformed. And it was really a hit piece using your family. And it was so sleazy, because if you look at the facts and evidence, he's right, they're wrong, and you think, what in the world could get them to do it? As one subscriber said, I bet they have a lot of pharma stocks in their trust. My guess is they had some kind of gun to their head, and you know, it was more than just money. Let's go to the movies. I suggested you take a look at a documentary, Fiat Empire, and it goes into the challenges of living with a fiat currency that serves as the global reserve currency. One of my favorite quotes about fiat currency was from one of the leaders at the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, because we used to talk about this. He said, fiat currency has done far more environmental damage than the worst mining companies ever dreamed of doing. And it's true. But if you're not a financial person, you haven't spent a lot of time trying to unpack and understand the financial system, you know, that you just don't understand that your real problem is not mining companies. Your real problem is fiat currency. It's a system that leads to massive unaccountability, especially because you can't optimize on a place-based basis. And creating a financial system that can optimize on a place-based basis, I would contend, is a lot easier to do than most people understand. Anyway, fiat currency, if you really care about the environment, you want to change the currency system. Thank you. Ask Catherine. Just resubscribed after being away for a while. Glad to be back, and I'm speeding through the quarterly report you sent. Thank you so much. I was wondering if you are aware of any risks associated with buying refurbished laptops as opposed to brand new. Also, I recently heard you express great dissatisfaction with the Microsoft software. Any alternative operating systems you would recommend? Thank you. I checked with our system mavens, and here's what they recommended. I have this list in the notes, so you can find it there in text form, but let me just go through it with you. One, refurbished Apple laptops are available from many sources at attractive prices. Be sure you have a good warranty from a respectable vendor. Apple sells refurbished certified laptops here. There's the link. They sell renewed ones here. In general, I've had good experiences with refurbished Apple hardware. Two, instead of Microsoft Office, use LibreOffice or OpenOffice. I use both of them, and I think they're great. Three, instead of Photoshop, use GIMP. I use GIMP, and that's great. Four, instead of Windows 10 on your existing PC hardware, use Ubuntu Desktop. Old and slow PC hardware hardware runs much faster with a Ubuntu Desktop. Avoid any Microsoft operating system. Five, avoid anything Google like the Chrome browser, Chromebooks, and Android phones and tablets. Six, if you have some PC application that doesn't run native on Mac OS, then get yourself a copy of Parallels Desktop here. The newer and the links in the notes. The newer versions work very well with any Microsoft proprietary code since they run an app in native mode with an Apple wall around it. Anyway, so try those, see if that helps. Then somebody sent in an excellent link to Mercola, which I've published. That's a real good one. Thank you for that. Hi, Catherine. I'm a Salary Report subscriber. I've been for a few years now. I heard you mention on a couple of occasions that on your travels around the U.S. you encountered building projects that you said were spaceports. I wonder if you could expand on why you think they are such and where I might find their locations. I call them spaceports because that's their name, and they're widely publicly announced locally. If you go to Wikipedia and just look up one word, spaceport, they've got it as one word. Or do a search for spaceport and you'll find Gizmodo has a story, eight spaceports that are America's gateway to the stars. So these are very public, transparent projects, at least as far as I know. So, anyway, but just take a look and troll around the country and see all the different spaceports that have been built. Then you continue. Any student of sciences can deduce that half of what is being touted truths or outright lies at best diversions from truth. Somewhere along the road to being awake, you are forced to ask why. Why the obvious push into clandestine technological research while at the same time suppressing new breakthroughs in science being brought forward by the garage scientist and backyard tinkerer. Of course, there's the always favorite go-to oil. Is that the only possibility for such a massive push? Might there be something else that is in the cause for what we are seeing and, of course, not seeing? Something so important that it requires an effort of literally planetary proportions. And then they go on to talk about the likelihood that we have, you know, a major event that we have to get out of the way. So let me just read towards the end. Another event I wonder about is the mass sighting or mass hysteria over Phoenix in March of 1997. That's the so-called Phoenix Lights episode. And if you haven't watched the documentary called Phoenix Lights, I recommend it. Do you actually think ET would drive a mile wide plus vehicle over the city of Phoenix the same night that the Hale-Bopp comet could be seen the best? Or was it simply a beta test to see how large a population would react to such event? Was it ET? To my way of thinking, that is a big fat no. How many millions to develop and launch one of the babies do you think? Then why so big? Maybe an arc? ? Thinking out loud. I think it's a distinct possibility because if you look at the behavior of the leadership since the early 90s, you kind of wonder if they're worried about an extinction event. And clearly concerns about geophysical and space weather and the health of the magnetic field is one of the possibilities. But the answer, again, is I don't know. But I will say this. I would love to see an accurate log of who and what is flying around above us because I think you know, there's a serious air traffic control. I don't know if you saw it. Ted Cruz, this came out and was arguing in the Senate for a Space Force and argued that, you know, in the olden days, you always need somebody to police the sea lanes. And just like you needed somebody to police the sea lanes from pirates, you were going to need somebody to police the sea lanes in suborbital platform in space. And he got roundly dished for saying that we had to protect our, you know, our space effort from space pirates, which I think was a bit unfair given what he said. But, you know, I do agree that what he said made sense, and I give him credit for not being afraid to say it. I think there's been so much suppression of what's going on in space that literally when Trump turns around and says, okay, we need a space force, everybody's looking at him like, huh, what for? They don't understand, in fact, how much their day-to-day flow of data on their phone, on their computer, on everything else rolls off of and through satellite. Hi, Catherine and Darlene. I think they could be talking about Bernie Tulsa or even Trump, although he is far from left. Former MP and author Chris Mullen on for CA 13.3 minutes. Just like in the U.S., peace leftist policies of Corbyn are smeared and undermined. So he's talking about a video he sent me that was very interesting. Among other things, interviewing the author or the publisher of the movie The Very British Coup, which is a story of a politician very similar to Corbyn getting absolutely slaughtered by the deep state. You had two PSs on your note. One was about good and evil. The other was a comment on white people, black people, Jewish people, and I didn't include it, but what you say just doesn't fit with my experience. I want to stress that the nature of moving to control through digital systems and technocracy is the ability to manipulate and control at a one-on-one individual level on a very economic basis. And part of that is mind control. So because each individual human is unique, I find dealing with cohorts that large as basically a very difficult way of, you know, it's basically an incoherent way of addressing what's happening. So I would encourage you to start thinking at a much more molecular or nanoparticle level. Then, hello, this is from a new subscriber who I guess is back. The reason I stopped posting was that I heard some disturbing comments online. I'm not sure what you were referring to, but I would love to. Then you had a whole bunch of personal data, which I didn't want to post because it's personal. And then whether an active subscriber or not, and even if I'm critical, I highly value your wisdom and keen insights. Also, feel free to share this info, including with Dark Journalist and Dr. Joseph Farrell, if they so choose. Take care and God bless. Okay, well, if you want to know, let me know what you found disturbing so that I can assess whether there's something we can do about it. Hello, dear Catherine. And then it's a new subscriber who has a long email. I'll put it in the notes. And he's talking about some of the deeper legal system issues and how the legal system is really constructed, or his theories on how it's really constructed. And anyway, just to let you know, I kind of stay away from this stuff. My experience is that the people who run the planet really don't respect the law, and they have formal law kind of for everybody else. And it's not that it isn't relevant or important and useful, you know, in sort of commercial disputes or other things where there's no big black budget issues. But, you know, but basically the deep state operates by consensus and is free to operate outside the law, and does. So I think going down the rabbit hole on a lot of these legal issues really comes down to believing that there's a party on the other side that's going to respect your rights under the law. And my experience is they don't. So it's a rabbit hole. I just feel that I shouldn't. You know, I'm much more interested in coming up with things that are really going to work. I just don't think it's a tactic that works. Anyway, so that's why I spend my time figuring out how we can shift the money. Okay, that's it for this evening. Next week, Deep State Tactics 101 Part 1. I've decided to basically record something that describes all the different, not all of them, but a fair amount of the tactics that are basically used to stop people who want to talk about the missing money or bring transparency to what's really happening with the money and touch what I call, touch the so-called third rail. And these are all, you know, basically I've been dealing with the missing money fraud since 1989. That's 30 years. So this is sort of an analysis of all the tactics that were used to try and stop me or my colleagues. Anyway, so I'm just going to record as long as it takes to cover all the material, and then we'll figure out how to break it down in parts. But I think it's very useful if you understand the tactics to kind of see them coming and duck and weave and navigate. So my goal ultimately is this material will help you navigate. Then the following week, the emerging multipolar world with Saker, I want to talk about what is not Netanyahu pushing for, why, and why do we think that the Pentagon is going to do everything in their power to talk Trump out of a war with Iran. Then I'll do the following week, we'll go back to the part two of Deep State Tactics, and then will ESG push the red button? That's the theme for the first quarter wrap-up on investment screening. So, ladies and gentlemen, remember the 2018 annual wrap-up will be here next week. The first volume and then the second volume should follow in approximately 2 weeks. It's terrific. And the premium subscribers are going to get we're going to mail them in two batches, so you'll get the first volume in the first mailing, and then you'll get a second volume in the second mailing. If you're not a premium subscriber, this is a book you want to get, you want to read it, and you want to consider getting multiple copies to get to the professionals in your life who are, you know, taking your money and engineering it into U.S. Treasuries and other federally or other securities that are entirely dependent on the federal credit. And I think you want to make sure that anybody you know who's responsible for your family savings or any aspect or part of it has the knowledge they need to consider what's really going on and to help you and protect you. So I can't recommend this enough, and I'm very happy that we were able to finally get it into a hard copy because, again, if you look at the censorship on the internet and the extent to which things are disappearing, I just think that a hard copy is something that we have to have. Anyway, so we'll let you know as soon as it goes up at the store, but consider getting Volume 1 and Volume 2 of The Real Game of Missing Money. So until next week with Deep State Tactics 101, Part 1, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.